In the world of Zoom, we're coming together breaking the mold. Two in studio, one remotely. This is the podcast of the Germanic American Institute.
Welcome.
We're Germanic-speaking European countries.
Germany.
Deutschland.
Austria.
Österreich.
Switzerland.
Schweiz.
Blend with the Midwestern United States.
Hallo.
Servus.
Grüezi.
We are here and there, and we invite you to come along on the journey. You know, rolling the intro as such feels really somewhat reminiscent of the days of old, of the trio being in the Damensalon. And I think today we're getting about as close as possible by bringing the trio back. We have Erin. Erin, hello.
Hello.
And we have Katrin. Katrin is joining us via Zoom, so we'll see how this goes today. Katrin, good to see you.
Good to see you too.
What? No longer moin moin?
I'm totally off my game, clearly. It's been so long.
It's been quite a while since we've all sat in the same room. I hope this is going to change in 2021 and we find ways and means to gather again, which of course has a little bit of side eye, if you will, toward the Oktoberfest, hoping that we can bring it back to the Schmidt Brewery. Announcements, of course, to follow, so please do stay tuned. Check out our websites, which we also have to talk maybe a little bit about that later on down the road. But I think one of the hallmarks of the trio coming together is Katrin and her grammar sessions. And I think today the grammar session really leads us down a rather interesting path. It's called False Friends. Am I getting this right?
Yeah, you are getting this right. We will be talking about words that sound very similar in English and in German and possibly even have the same root, but ended up meaning something quite different, which can lead to confusion for learners both of English and learners of German.
So what would a false friend be?
For example, a perennial favorite is der Chef. Which, of course, in English would mean somebody that is hopefully good at cooking at a fairly high level. However, in German, it means the boss. So we have chef on chef, same word, but completely different meaning. I mean, you can imagine that that can potentially lead to confusion. Another good one is die Rente, which, you know, rent in English, of course, you know, means you're paying for staying somewhere. Mm-hmm. But rente is actually you're getting paid. Namely, it's the pension that you're getting. Another good one is das Gymnasium and the gym. Gym, of course, here in the US, we're talking about fitness, we're talking about exercise equipment and so on. But in Germany, really, it's the college preparatory school. So the school you go to if you would like to attend the university later, which is das Gymnasium. Also, die Hochschule, for example, the direct translation, literal translation, of course, would be high school. However, they're very different. High school here, clearly up to age 18 or 19. And then Hochschule really is tertiary education in Germany. So Hochschule being translated with high school, you know, really depicts two very, very different levels of the educational system. And my perennial favorite with these false friends, of course, is student and student. So student in German really means somebody that is over 18, that is attending a university to learn there. However, student here really applies to basically anybody that is trying to learn anything. And that leads us to the verb studieren and to study, which I always have in class being very confusing for my students, because studieren in German really means you are at a higher education institution, you're pursuing some sort of degree in an area. So I can studieren mechanical engineering, for example. But if I'm trying to study for my thermodynamics exam, that really is lernen. So anyone in my class, they are not studying German. Sie lernen Deutsch, and memorizing all of that all falls under that.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. If you are an adult but learning, like, what would you call your adult German students, like in your classes that you teach? Would you call them Schüler? I always assumed Schüler was like younger kids, but you could be any age and be a Schüler.
Correct. Yes. Okay. Today people are also saying Lernende, which of course omits the gender challenge that Schüler and Schülerin presents. But Schüler and Schülerin, I would very much so refer to my adult learners as Schüler and Schülerinnen.
Okay.
Erin, your German is, to begin with, pretty solid. You spent 3 years in Berlin. The false friends that Catherine just introduced, I'm sure you were aware of to some degree, anyways. How long did it take you to discern the differences and then really build this into vocabulary? Or is there some form of crutch, if you will, to hold on to that made it easier for you to figure out what is what in English versus German?
Right. I think for me it was just having more conversations with people when I was there and using the wrong word and having them correct you. I feel like most people know English, so they would know what you were saying anyway. For example, I remember even from a young age, our German teacher in high school had taught us the difference between Gift and Geschenk. So Gift being poison. That was like really drilled into our heads. So I said, I will never make this mistake. And I think to this day, I never have. But studieren, lernen, obviously Studenten and Schüler, that's sort of harder to get straight in your head until you use it more often.
So I guess the mnemonic bridge here would be that in German, if I give you a gift, it was definitely your last birthday.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Katrin, is there teacher's perspective, is there an easy bridge to discern the differences and just take them with you? Or is this something you just have to learn and know, just learn by heart, basically?
Well, I mean, considering we're in the land of convenience here, right? It would be really nice to just say, oh, you know, the easy way to do this is such and such. This is the trick. But I think really it's a form of memorization one has to make or has to do. And I think Aaron's tip also is very relevant. Go to the country, talk to people. They will let you know, and not in a mean way, but, you know, if you see a look of perplexion on their face as to why you're giving away gift, you will figure it out pretty quickly. But if I may geek out here for a second.
Geek away.
Yeah. For my fellow German grammar nerds, we are maybe wondering why is it that such similar words have such different meanings, especially since really English and German are both West Germanic languages and have lots of similarities. And we know lots of words, you know, arm, finger, hand, and so on that actually mean the exact same. They are both languages, obviously. They have common linguistic roots, but they're also borrowing heavily from each other. And they're each also borrowing from Latin, French, and other languages. And sometimes in the original language, the original meaning of the word is lost and it has evolved to something different. But the development then has not caught or, you know, has not been the same in the other language that is borrowing this word. So that way their evolvement is a little bit divergent. Mm-hmm. And so they end up with different meanings. Of course, there are also words in German that sound English. So for example, handy, you know, the cell phone or mobile form is a famous one. When I tell my German students here that in Germany we say handy, they have the hardest time pronouncing it the English way and usually say handy, but really it is handy. Or the word mobbing. Now, handy hasn't quite broken into the English language room, but mobbing, the word mobbing definitely has. It is used here now as well for the, you know, rather not so fun action of bullying. Mm-hmm. So really, it's again a mix of languages, and the more global we become, of course, the more this will happen.
I believe to remember, and don't hold me to that, or at least verify the number anyway, just Dr. Google has the answer probably much more decisively than I do. But my TA out of Trier at Hamelin, she told me that we have about 4,000 English words incorporated into the German language now, coming predominantly, of course, out of tech and social media, where the barriers blend, I suppose, because a lot of terminology comes out of Silicon Valley and is just being catered over. But the same actually started many, many years ago when we look at the origins of pop culture, where David Hasselhoff made it across the pond and we had Knight Rider.
Did you have to mention him? Really, it had to be David Hasselhoff.
Of course. I mean, he's one of the German fan favorites, no?
Uh-huh.
We all know him.
Yeah, we know him for Knight Rider more so than for, you know, his singing abilities, but okay.
Okay, the Hoff usually kills the conversation. do we have to add anything else on the false friends?
Oh, there is plenty to be added, and I would strongly recommend to take a language class with the GEI, where you will learn for so much about false friends, but also all these other grammatical topics. And I can assure you that most of our teachers are joining me in the grammar nerdyism. So I think for now we will leave it at this. But again, come to our classes. We always talk about it.
Allow me a quick shameless plug here as well, since we are talking about expansion of your vocabulary. As you may have noticed, in between our regular episodes, which could be interview episodes, or the trio, which has now made its resurgence, if you will, we do have Storycast. Storycast are short stories, and you will find the text to read along, read with us, basically, as we go through the podcast, or the Storycast in this case, rather. The first two episodes were done by yours truly. I have a couple more in store, and then I hope that we can involve other voices of the GEI as well to basically give us a little bit of a different flavor and also different pronunciations, because regional dialects vary, of course, from Austria to Germany and so forth. So also on that note, if you'd like to have us do a particular story that you are especially fond of, just contact us at podcast@gei-mn.org. That was the shameless plug. Moving on, because I gotta mind my manners. And since we're at the topic, it's about mannerisms, behaviors in German that, or in Germany, Austria, perhaps Switzerland as well, that differ a little bit from the US. And the first thing that comes to mind for me, to be honest, are table manners. Mm-hmm. How do you hold your wine glass? What do you do when you're at a party and there's wine being served? How do you get out of that party? Because I can assure you it's not as easy as you think, that it's just to put down the glass and escape out the door. That's not how we roll. Let's start with table manners. Is there anything, Catherine, that stands out to you in terms of German table manners that you would like to see here or incorporate from American mannerisms into Germany? Certain things that stand out to you?
I think one has to always keep in mind that it differs from family to family here as well, and it certainly does so in Germany too. It's difficult for me sometimes to be with my husband's family because they are just zero rules in any way, shape, or form. And that doesn't mean, you know, terrible eating habits or anything like that. But I very much come from a background where you wait until everybody has sat down, including the person that has made the meal, which is really a sign of respect to the person that has made the meal. That is not happening in the family, who is lovely, by the way, but that I married into. It's kind of more of a free-for-all, really. I mean, you get in line, you get your food, sit down. Maybe there's a little bit of table conversation, but certainly not really discussing the food or anything like that. It's a fairly quick and fairly casual affair. Mm-hmm. Again, this is not certainly with every family. My host family, for example, is very different. They do wait for everybody, but that is hard for me to yeah, digest, so to speak. You know, not to have like this general ability to wait for everybody to sit down.
I think my example perhaps is a little bit more nitpicky, if you will. For instance, it was drilled into my behaviorism that when you're sitting at the dinner table, your elbows are not under the table. They're always at table height. So your wrists essentially are on the table at essentially in line of the plate. I can identify the majority of Americans, for instance, in the way that we hold our forks here. Whereas Austrians, as far as I have come to know them, hold forks in a different manner. Imagine this as if you were to hold a pen ready to write something. We are holding our forks much more gingerly, if you will, and not as if we are ready to kill someone. So that's just some of the things. And I'm still holding the wine glass back. We'll get to that towards the end of that.
We have to cover the wine. That's yes. Very important.
So. Coming back from Berlin, Erin, anything that you had to retrain yourself or anything that stood out to you after your experience over there?
Yeah. So, and you both can tell me if this is correct or not. But I remember that people hold their fork and knife in a different hand than you do, or they switch. I just noticed, and a colleague of mine here, we were talking about this with Bettina, who's on the communications team, that I think in Germany you do a lot more like with the knife, like moving food around your plate and shaping the fork bowls. Whereas like I think in America you cut things and then you put the knife down and then you eat, you know, with your right hand if you're right-handed with the fork. Whereas I saw more people using their left hand with the fork and like using their dominant hand to do the knife. And I feel like that's how people in my host family had the clean plate club. I mean, they could get every grain of rice or couscous off of their plate. And my plate was always a big mess until I improved my silverware techniques.
There is that. It's interesting that you mentioned that because as you're explaining this, I'm going through my memories and faculties, if you will, trying to remember how did we do this. And indeed, the memory that comes back to me is that we have very organized plates, very almost over-engineered plates in a typical German-Austrian fashion. Like everything has its little spot. And yes, very true. We usually hold on to both pieces of the silverware, fork as well as knife, even though when we plate the table, if you will, when we have the arrangement, the fork starts off on my right, the knife set essentially with the spoons and whatnot on my left, whereas in the act of using it, we're actually transitioning over, at least as far as I remember, where my fork then resides in the left and the knife in the right, because I am right-handed, so I need my power, so to speak, in cutting things. And then I usually don't put silverware down until I'm done, unless, of course, I have absolutely zero use for the knife. I mean, those are the things that I remember now since you mentioned it. Very, very granular. And if I lost you in the description, I would not fault you. Catherine, rather surprised facial expression here.
I don't know that I ever have seen, neither in catering nor in private events, a knife on the left. I think it's always on the right. Sometimes the fork goes on the right, to the right of the plate as well. And sometimes the fork is on the left. But I don't know. You're Austrian. I'm Northern German. There's bound to be some differences
okay,
there.
Then let's match up if the wine glass situation actually is applicable across Southern Europe, Austria, the southern side, if you will, and the Northern Austrians, aka Germans. When we have a stemmed wine glass, we hold it at the stem, not with your pinky out that's been overrated and overdone in pop culture, but we usually hold on to the wine glass, again, very gingerly on the stem, so that when we toast each other, it actually has this wonderful sound of glass essentially
so
clinging.
The stem, but closer to the cup part?
No, the stem center to actually more towards the bottom.
I feel like that'd be hard to balance.
It depends on how much you have in the glass.
That depends on how much you've had before from the glass.
Same idea in Northern Germany?
Yeah, very much so. And you don't want to hold it by the glass itself, by the cup part, because that'll warm up the wine too.
Right.
I feel like Americans hold the cup part of the glass, don't we?
Frequently, yes. Yeah.
My goodness.
And here's the grand reveals, so to speak. When it's about parties, particularly in rural Austria, and you're invited, there is wine being served, as it is tradition. The problem with it is to get away, to be done and say, okay, I'm going home. Because the host or the people who serve usually have an incredibly keen eye to figure out when your glass is down to about a quarter full. And it will immediately be refilled. So the only way to get out of partying, essentially, and consuming more wine than you should, is by leaving just a little bit more than a quarter of your wine in the glass. Wait until you're ready to leave. Take one big gulp, put the glass down, take off.
That's really smart. I feel like I definitely have been stuck at people's houses before, and you don't want to be rude, and they keep pouring, and it's very, yeah, that's excellent.
There's another thing that emphasizes the opportunity to get out. We don't do half-hour goodbyes. Oh, we don't do the Minnesota goodbye.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
Katrin?
Well, in Germany, number one, there is this tradition in northern Germany, in the tea part of Germany, where you have to have at least 2 cups of tea before you're allowed to leave again. And if you don't want any more tea, you leave a little bit in your cup, because otherwise, you know, you will be replenished. Also, there's this joke in Germany, which I find very... true, and I certainly do that. You sit, you know, and you talk to your host or at the party, and then you slam your hands onto your thighs and say, "Zah," and you get up and leave.
Yeah,
it seems to be a central gesture.
Yes, I think we actually do the same. We just have this very accentuated, "I'm done, I'm leaving." And I'm guessing it's the same in northern Germany. There is no half-hour goodbye in the foyer.
No, there isn't. You.
I'm so guilty of the half-hour goodbye. I think that drove I used to go visit my host family after I no longer lived with them. And I think they were like trying to push me out. And I'm like still talking and wearing my jacket and my shoes on.
So
but
Minnesota.
Then, of course, we have to put it the other way too, right? For Germans coming to Minnesota, the half-hour goodbye absolutely is a cultural fact and needs to be observed. I mean, you don't want to seem abrupt, as Germans frequently are seen anyhow. So you need to adapt a little bit to the cultural standings here. So, yes, you cannot do that here to slap your thighs and leave. You have to do it in incremental steps.
You can do it at the GAI. We'll allow that here.
You know, even 20 years later, I still have an issue with hanging out in the foyer for 30 minutes and talk about something that we could have settled over another glass of wine at the table. But I suppose, really, different countries, different customs. And the last one I want to throw in here, actually, Katrin, you have another one?
I find it funny when you say we are holding our fork in Germany, not like we want to kill someone, and I would agree with that. But on the other hand, that's what you can say about German table manners too, right? Why do you keep your knife in your hand? I mean, are you really planning on just using that on your plate, or are you, you know, doing things that have far-reaching consequences with it?
Yes, I just don't touch my plate.
I know. The last thing too is what the mom of my best friend always calls the American arm, because when she came back from the US, she put her left hand into her lap, as is very customary here. But in Germany, don't do that. As you mentioned before, have your wrists on the table. Don't lie on the table, obviously, but have your wrists on there.
Is it considered rude to have, like, to leave food on your plate at the end of a meal? Or does it signify that you didn't enjoy it? I feel like my host family, they always used to chastise me about food left on my plate.
I think it's more about you're not able to organize your food intake. You know, if you took more than you are actually eating, I don't consider it rude. Okay. But thinking back, I don't think there are a lot of people that do. It's more like of planning ahead, you know, very German, like how much of this am I actually going to eat?
Okay, so poor planning on my part. That makes sense. That makes sense.
Or just a different culture, you know.
You know, yesteryear I would have said, yes, this is probably perceived as rude. I think nowadays there is a lot more sensitivity towards certain food groups and certain digestive limitations that people have, where they just simply say, I don't want this, but I want that. So I think that that's much more accommodated nowadays. But at the same token, if you're loading up on, let's just say, goulash worth of 6 plates, and you leave 4 of which sit there and untouched, then yeah, you're going to get the raised eyebrow for sure.
Right.
I think we very much need to keep in mind, though, too, that everybody feels a little bit, or tends to feel a little bit, superior about the table manners or manners or, you know, cultural habits that one grew up with. And in the end, the goal is to sit together, maybe enjoy a meal, talk, you know, bond, connect with other people. And so be it. I mean, yes, we're trying to do it the correct way when we're, you know, going somewhere, for example, Germany, but don't be afraid to, you know, make mistakes or something. We want a global society, and these are some of the cultural differences that just happen. And if it really bothers you, talk about it.
Let's just say that we meet in Hanover, wherever, in your hometown, let's just say, and you don't know me. We meet casually or perhaps at work. Would you invite me home for dinner? I mean, not making a personal reference upon me, but generally culturally.
Now, these are two different things. No, not right away, certainly. I mean, you're probably a little bit more protective of your personal space than you're here, and work and personal life don't really mix as easily. If I knew you better, after a while, I would invite you for a dinner, certainly. And I would also not be shocked if you just showed up, not for dinner, but just to say hi or something. I think that's a little bit more possible than here, maybe.
Interesting. Because in Austria, particularly Vienna and surrounding areas, it would take forever and a day until you're showing up with an invitation to dinner. So basically being invited in is almost an invitation into the inner sanctum, and you're suddenly part of the family. Now, would it be surprising that if you're living on the outskirts, for instance, and you do have a front yard and you're doing some work and somebody shuffles by and there is the typical exchange at the fence, and suddenly somebody, wife, husband, whatever, brings a glass of wine or beer out of the house for both, and the exchange continues fence side? Yes, absolutely. But for anyone to step foot in someone's house and being actually invited seems to take forever in Austria. So if you are managing to get an invitation, you're part of the family. Congratulations. Welcome home.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm just thinking about when I worked in Berlin. I mean, of course, at the time I was young and, you know, I feel like there was sort of more of that division, that even a couple of my colleagues who were the same age or in the same age group, maybe we would go out to lunch together, like during the work day, but we sort of left work at work.
Sure.
But I mean, if you're looking here, especially in Minnesota, there is a degree to this, right? This Minnesota ice situation. I mean, people say all the time, oh, let's, you know, go for lunch or something, or, you know, we should get together. But for newcomers, for people that you don't really know and that maybe moved here shortly, it's very, very difficult to break in. So I don't feel like you immediately invite people over necessarily either. And if you do, it doesn't necessarily mean anything, because we have this whole peach coconut situation, right? So northern Germans or northern Europeans are coconuts. It takes you forever to get in. They have a really hard exterior. It's difficult. But once you're in, you're in, and you're in forever. While in the US, it's a little bit more peachy. It's easier to get into the outer shell, to make small talk, that kind of stuff. But it's really, really difficult to really get to know someone.
I've never heard that before, but that is so accurate.
I haven't either, and I'm going to steal it. So I'm going to use it in class. I'm going to cite you 3 times. At the 4th time, it's mine. That was really good. Anything else we need to add on the customs and habits and things you shall or shall not do?
Relax and enjoy. I think that is the main thing.
Yeah. Oh, I wanted to ask more also as a review for me. What are some nice ways to compliment the chef? Like if you're at someone's house in Germany and, you know, I feel like I have like a high school old knowledge of this, like das Essen hat geschmeckt, or I don't really know what I would say that wouldn't sound like stilted. I don't know. Du hast gut gekocht. What was a good thing to say?
Ja, super gekocht, oder das ist lecker, oder das schmeckt mir sehr gut, oder das hat mir sehr gut geschmeckt.
Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be complicated. You know, you could even have a big smile or a thumbs up or something. Any communication on that is always appreciated.
Okay, so with schmecken, you have to say das schmeckt mir.
Correct. You would use the dative for that. That's one of those verbs that requires the dative.
Okay.
I would say...
extra grammar.
Right. I would say, of course, say something. Of course, please do so with your mouth empty, not while you're mid food, which also leads me into the other one that please chew with your mouth closed, which also applies to chewing gum. Another one of those things that a lot of older folks in Europe frown upon. If you hear somebody coming from 6 miles away, the gum basically being the announcement. But otherwise, no, just say something, and it doesn't even matter whether you hit it perfectly. I mean, just the appreciation of food goes a long way. And if you want to go back to what Katrin said earlier, just smack your thighs and say, I'm done. You can just also smack your stomach and say, oh, das war gut, and do it the Bavarian way.
Nice. Thank you.
You are very welcome. Of course, it's not just about grammar and food and customs and drinking wine fast and dashing out the door, but there are also events going on. Erin, what do we have cooking?
Yes. So another reason why we are talking about food is I'm thinking about food a lot lately. We have some food-themed events coming up at the GAI. Next Sunday, February 28th, we are having our first ever virtual cooking class, which is Making Spätzle with Helga, who many of you know from GAI events and GAI food. And yeah, I think that'll be really fun. I think she's going to go through three different ways to make Spätzle. Tickets are $5, and you can register on our website. And then in March, deviating slightly from food, we have an armchair travel event on Sunday, March 13th, where we are taking folks virtually to Austria, to the Alps, to do some virtual skiing, look at some pictures, we have some videos from a ski instructor colleague, and Michael Kenny, I think is his name, from a travel company that we've worked with before, is going to be talking about that travel experience. And finally, wrapping up with food, at the end of March, we have the GAI's famous pork and kraut dinner, which will be curbside this year, thanks to COVID. And we will open registration up for that on March 1st. And speaking of our website, we have a new website. So if you go to gaimn.org, we have taken out the dash. It's still in our email addresses, but not in the URL. But if you go to the old link, it will redirect you to the new website. But we have a new look to the website. We have some new functionalities. For example, the podcast, which was formerly available only in podcast players, like on your phone and such. Now you can listen to any episode you want in the whole library live, just from the website, or not live. Streaming from the website. And we have a new calendar function where you can pull up a calendar and look at everything going on at the GAI, from events to language classes, which you all should sign up for, and summer camps. So that's what we have going on. Please take a look at the website and let us know how you like it. We're excited about it.
And Deutsche Tage as well as Oktoberfest, too soon to say, right?
Right. I think they're happening in some form. They will probably have been Yeah, in some form, for sure. We can say that. Sure. But that's all okay. We can say at this point.
No, that's perfectly fair. It's just something to look forward to. It's two staple events, of course, that I think we will try our best to put them on in the most safe and secure fashion. But in one way or another, I hope that they're happening.
Yes, we'll do our best.
Well, that's all I had.
Okay.
That's all you had?
Yeah. Going off of what Katun said too, in March, we will open up registration for our spring language classes. Those will start in April, but all of you planners and organizers out there like to get things on your schedule, we'll open up registration in March. And March is coming up really soon. It's only like next week. So
it's and spring. Summer camp registrations are open as well, by the way.
Yes, yeah. Parents, get your kids signed up for summer camp. What are
Which
they going
to
do?
Which is really very nice to think of summer right now. And yeah. I mean, winter really hasn't been bad at all, but it's just nice to think about some green outside.
So quite a few things going on, which is good. Yeah. All right. Well, Katrin, thank you so much for virtually being here.
Sehr gerne.
And the trio, I think, is going to make a reappearance again before too long, hopefully.
Yeah, for sure.
Erin, thank you so much.
Thanks.
And this being said, it was great to have at least one other person in the room. Soon to be two other people, then we have the trio together. Until then, please stay safe, of course. Check out the new website. Don't forget to take the dash out. It's gaimn.org. Send us an email if you like, podcast@gi-mn.org. There's the dash still in there. Soon to be removed, I'm sure.
That's true.
And other than that, this is Günther signing off. Thanks for being with us, and we'll talk to you again soon. Tschüss.